So, yeah, so we had a rather, I guess, how would you describe it? I don't know, dramatic end to the scenario. Oh, it's certainly disgusting.
Yes, and Richard has developed fangs and venom sacs.
Of course, yeah. I wonder where they are. I guess they're in the neck or something. Yeah. Just underneath the jawline or something, I imagine. That soft part, yeah.
That's not weird at all.
Yeah, so yes, I guess you could say that you rather neatly tied up the incident in Bingham, Oklahoma. There were, I don't think, were there any real casualties? I don't think there were. Nobody actually died. Can you believe it?
Skill.
That's surprising for Cthulhu.
Surprising for you lot, I think.
Well, yes, for us as well.
Well, we did leave the heavy guns at home.
Yes, that's true. I suppose a version of someone dying is the closest we got. So yes, you discovered in the end that with some rather personal experiences that the whole situation was some kind of, the Reverend Cornfield had been chosen by Yik, really. He'd been out in the desert dying of dehydration, and in fact, possibly according to what he said, he actually did die. But either way, Yig blessed him, and his blessing was to have a host body that would continually produce more versions of the Reverend Cornfield when one of them died. And the production method was not particularly pleasant, as he was birthed out of a large cloaca flapping on his belly.
So good.
I actually afterwards looked up some pictures of real cloacas, and it wasn't a very pleasant journey into the anatomy of animals. Because I was thinking, gosh, what do they really look like? But anyway.
But Richard killed him, or put him out of his misery anyway.
Yeah, well, Richard dispatched whatever that thing was, that body. And the Reverend Cornfield then came back to himself, really. He came back to a semblance of his former self. Had forgotten much of what had happened, and it seemed like the townspeople also were then kind of slowly coming to you. You did it just in time to prevent a lynching as well of Susie.
Although we did leave those snake children in the home.
True.
Of
what's
her name?
Well, yeah, I guess they will have an interesting first day at school, won't they? Those kids.
Now, Jimmy, don't bite your other kids in class.
Snake babies.
Amazing. Right. Now, I guess you're back in New York, as you can see by the map that we've got out. We've got that nice map of New York, that map of Manhattan, of the Wondrous Isle.
It is good to be home. Did you hear that Calvin Coolidge won the election?
I'm not much for politics, Doc.
Oh dear, oh dear. Actually, it is 1933, so I don't know how the map, it says 1925, but it's 1933.
Oh, 1933. Okay.
Yeah, so
let me alter
that. So it'll be a different, I think it'll be a different one.
Guess you're not one for politics either.
I don't know if you heard, but Calvin Coolidge won the presidency 8 years ago.
Yeah, I think according to our, well, let's add another week to that. So it's now the 10th of May. So a beautiful spring day when you get back to New York. On your various answering services, there is a request for you to return for a full debriefing at the Meadham building at your earliest convenient opportunity. So if you wish to do that first thing, up to you. There was a little hint of urgency in the note, but not like you must come now and tell us all kind of thing, but they like to be punctual, the Caduceus organization.
I think we should go over there.
I mean, it appears that this organization is the only one we can really speak to about our maladies.
Yeah, maladies, as he tongues where his fang tracked.
So, you've arrived at Penn Station, the magnificent Penn Station, which is a true marvel of early 20th century architecture. Its vast hall and columns and the stained glass window at the end letting shafts of brilliant coloured light in. The reason I'm describing it so in such detail is that there's a tragic story behind Penn Station. It was knocked down to make Madison Square Gardens, and they turned it into this horrible rat's warren of tunnels.
Yeah, that is a particularly awful station.
Yeah, now it's literally one of the worst stations imaginable, but it used to be this amazing, like, cathedral to architecture. It was beautiful. I think the quote is, "We used to enter New York as kings, and now we enter as rats scurrying through tunnels."
Ooh.
I can't remember who said that. Anyway, and so you get the subway across town to the Upper East Side, where the Meadham building is, on Park Row. on the Upper East Side. And you are shown up to the usual debriefing room where Gonsalves is waiting. So you're shown up to the 8th floor and Gonsalves is sitting there and he's smoking his pipe. Don't think he had a pipe before, but he's got one now. And he just kind of glances up at you with that familiarity now that you've been working together for enough time now for him to perhaps treat you as trusted colleagues. And he says, good. You came promptly. I'm pleased. We did get some indication from your travel plans that you have been successful, I gather. You certainly look in fine shape, he says, looking at you all.
Well, we're not dead, if that's what you mean.
Yes, that's a good start, I think.
That town you sent us to has quite the infestation.
Yes, yes. We suspected as much. But how did you handle things? I trust you took my recommendation to heart about not harming the people of that town.
We did. We didn't hurt anybody. I killed something, but it wasn't a member of the town, I can tell you that.
Oh, really? Please elucidate.
Well, we went out to this cave, and there's the Reverend Cornfield took us out there, and he was like the main priest of Yig. At least they said they were worshipping Yig.
Hmm.
And there was a weird, I don't know, Doc. What was that thing called again?
A cloaca.
A cloaca, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the Reverend Cornfield laying on a slab of stone. But it wasn't really him. It was some weird mutant version with a cloaca, as the Doc says. But it was birthing the... What'd you say, Mr. Selby? It was birthing the Reverend Cornfield over and over again?
Yes.
Really?
Definitely.
So there were many of these Cornfields running around?
No, it was like when one died, this thing somehow knew that another one needed to take its place. Although, I think there was 3 of them at one point.
God, this is incredible, incredible. But you examined this entity before you killed it? Or after?
I did. I tried to, like, just give it a little cut and try to wake him up. But when I looked into his eyes, there wasn't anything human looking back at me. I don't think there was anything at all. More like his body was alive, but his brain wasn't.
Ah, fascinating, fascinating. So, like a birthing organism.
Yeah.
I believe they are called women.
Oh,
ouch.
Archie.
Oh, no.
Dishonor.
No, that's, yeah.
I don't think called birthing.
No, no, it was definitely that.
Quite irregular.
I unfortunately don't have any photos of this entity or the cloaca, as it were, but Logan pulls out a envelope and hands it to Gonzalez, you know, copies of pictures that he'd taken while they were there.
He takes a puff on his pipe, takes the manila envelope from you and starts one by one pulling the black and white photographs out and examining them. He puffs again, he takes a deep draw, studies them with intense curiosity. And he says, these are remarkable, Mr. Logan.
Oh, and you might want to send a party out to one Peggy Shaw's house. There's something there you might find interesting.
Right, right. The thing that he's most fascinated by, apart from the dramatic and, I would say, newspaper-worthy photos of burning churches and angry mobs, he's particularly interested by the photos you took of the book of the Reverend's Bible. And he says, remarkable, remarkable. These scribblings are, well, I think there is some deep knowledge in these. Do you mind if we make copies of these?
You can have those. I made those for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Very kind. Now, you said when you examined the body, not human, but was it a hybrid? Did it have scales? Did you check underneath the eyelids?
It did have a cloaca.
Yes.
I did look at the eyelids. It appeared to be human, except for the cloaca. Because I did look under his eye. I think I did.
But yeah, you did. You did.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys got the memo, but you're supposed to do a shot every time you say the word cloaca.
Oh, really?
It's such a horrible word.
It seems like we're saying it a lot, so I think we'd be drunk by the time we're done with this.
Yeah, yeah. And he says, but this is extraordinary, because in all our research, there is no evidence of hybrids, or even fully Ophidian snake people having live birth, as you say.
this is some kind of freak of nature that you are describing.
Yes, yeah, I would agree with that. Having seen it was definitely a freak of nature. And it wasn't so much the birthing was pretty bad, but just the fact that, I don't know, it's like they took his mind. That was very disturbing to me.
Wow. And why would Yig bless some dying churchman in a desert? That also is very strange to me. Was there any reason you could think why this man would have been singled out for such a blessing?
Well, if you think about it, it's an excellent way to spread your teachings, as it were.
Oh, true. Yes.
The man himself claimed he was wandering in the desert, and he confessed that he thought he was about to die when he came upon a particular cave in the desert. And that is where Ig had contacted him.
And the cave itself? Was there anything remarkable about the cave?
We could not find anything, no.
I mean, there was a voice that came from the cave that, said something about a curse of Yig.
The curse of Yig.
Yeah.
It is interesting how easily the people of the town accepted this new teaching.
Well.
Indeed, they seem to have not thought twice about it.
Almost like a brainwashing or something, maybe.
Absolutely, but if you have a deity, if you like, commanding you, what can you do?
Now, you know, it could have been some kind of weird magic, because when we were in the cave, something happened and the reverend, well, the one of the reverends, not the one on the slab, but the other reverend, and Mr. Selby and the doc all started chanting and kneeling, and I couldn't get through to them, even with slapping them, or they were all under some sort of spell, kneeling and chanting to Yig, what I assume was Yig.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chesterton, for bringing that up.
Oh, do not worry.
I'm just saying that that was another interesting thing that happened in the cave, you know? Gotta tell him everything, right, Doc?
So, yes, well, look, everything is... This is all very, very important and useful information. If Yig has the power to do these things, then what an implacable enemy he would make. Thank God he has the wisdom to not seek to destroy us, but instead to find a way to coexist. So, thank you. I will take all of this to Mr. Meadham. He will be extremely interested. These photographs will no doubt aid our quest to find out exactly what is going on. Now, I know you are probably exhausted, tired, maybe even a bit dusty. I can still see some dust on your trousers, Mr. Logan.
And on my chaps.
You still wear your chaps.
But there may be some more work coming your way very soon. I will be in touch shortly. But please, take your time to rest and recuperate. Our archives, our administrative offices, our map room, our reference libraries will all be at your disposal for anything you wish to investigate further. But thank you again. You're proving to be most effective agents of our organization.
Oh, you know, all in a day's work, I suppose.
Anything we can do to hasten a cure for our afflictions?
No. Right now, our scientists are working hard. It seems there may be certain, let us say, arcane procedures that are required. I know now that you have been exposed to many things, surely your beliefs must be somewhat more broad than they were before all this began, yes? You would believe if I told you there is magic in this world.
I have seen things that have led in that direction.
Well, it seems that there may be certain procedures, certain even artifacts, possibly, that would enable this, let's say, reversion back to your original biological state. But it appears that we do not have the things at our disposal that are required. That is why we must proceed with these missions. I feel we are getting somewhat closer to understanding this.
Well, that's good news if you're getting closer.
Well, with your help. So, I will bid you adieu. We will be forwarding a large cash transfer to your bank accounts tomorrow morning as reward. Please spend it wisely.
All right.
And with that, he gets up, nods curtly, and leaves. So you're free to do what you wish now, at least until he contacts you again. But if you wanted to research anything, they have very impressive reference libraries.
Well, I'm here to sign out the Serpent Fire Gun It's for my own personal reasons. Don't worry about it.
When you want to brulee something, you gotta have the snake fire gun.
I am giving a lecture in the humanities department in a week or so, and I'd very much like to display a few of these items.
I think, Richard, if I can, I'd like to go to the reference library and read up on snake and their fangs.
So while you're doing that, why don't we do a couple of these backstory scenes while Richard is trying to learn about how fangs work. I'll tell you what, Richard, because right now, as part of your, you know, with your fangs, I think, as I said last time, you've got a new skill, haven't you? Did you put it down? I think
you did. Poisonous, fighting bite, 1d8 damage plus poison.
Yes.
Chance.
Currently, you're not very good at it.
Nope, 25.
You've only got a 25. But I'll tell you what, if you do a decent amount of studying and maybe even a little bit of practice, I'll give you an opportunity to maybe improve that.
Nice. Oh, practice.
Who are you practicing on?
You know, I'm thinking like, you know how they practice giving injections on like fruit and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Biting apples.
Yeah, like I'm going to bite like oranges and things like that.
So you're injecting your poison into the oranges and leaving them there for people?
Better than running around trying to find, you know, alley cats and stuff.
I mean, you may need to progress to, like, watermelons and stuff, you know, to kind of get the feel. But...
yeah, okay, that works. Yeah.
Richard Chesterton could just become a serial killer who wanders around Chinatown, you know, and people think there's a vampire on the loose.
It'd be like Benicula.
Yeah, there we go. Now, Logan.
Logan is going to spend his... he has a friend named Wiley Post, and he's planning a trip to the... he's going to attempt the first solo flight around the world.
Wow.
And he's been preparing a plane at the Floyd Bennett Field in New York. So Logan's going to go there and, you know, hang out with his friend there and give him a hand, you know, preparing the plane. And
one of your backstory elements, you should put a star next to, because that's the key thing. Because when you interact with that, if you use that in between missions, you get a bonus dice on your sanity roll.
I mean, I already have Charles Lindbergh there, but it's kind of the same idea. I'm just pissed off at Charles Lindbergh.
Okay, so what's this guy's name?
Wiley Post.
Wiley Post. Is that a real person?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is.
Wiley Post became the first person to fly solo around the world in July. Yeah. Left from Floyd Bennett Field in New York and returned after 7 days, 18 hours, and 49 minutes.
Good God, you'd think he would be like one of the most famous people in the world for that. But I mean, Charles Lindbergh, everyone knows Charles Lindbergh. And he only went across the Atlantic, didn't he? All right, so you go to Floyd Bennett Field. It's actually on an island, I believe, in Brooklyn, south of Brooklyn. So you head down on the train to the south of Brooklyn, get the train, and then maybe you get a taxi to take you out to the island, which Floyd Bennett Field is on. And Wiley is there, face covered in oil, in grease, as usual. And yeah, he's tinkering away, and he waves at you across the field as he sees you pull up in the cab. So.
I was going there to give my friend Wiley a hand, you know. I worked on airplanes, you know, in the military while I was in the military. So I just work with him, practice flights. We're pals maybe from the military or whatever. Or we just happen to know each other because I'm really into airplanes. Just helping him prepare the plane maybe if I can.
Oh, he's got a funny eye, judging by the look of it. One of his eyes is a bit squinty. I think he got an injury to his eye during the war. And he wears an eye patch most of the time. And he's not a slim man. He's got a bit of a belly on him. Maybe all the better for when you're up in the air for so long, all, you know, in the cold, and gives him a bit of padding, a bit of insulation. He has a thin moustache and swept over hair, and he waves over at you. And he says, Logan, my boy, great to see you. How's tricks?
Hey, Wiley, how's it going?
Very good, Logan. You know, it's going to happen. I've got a good feeling this time. I know I've told you that at least three times in the past year, but I think this girl's ready to do it. She's ready to do it, he says, patting the side of his aeroplane.
Well, I've got some time on my hands, and I'm here to give you a hand if you need some help.
He pats the side of his Lockheed, and, yeah, the Winnie Mae.
The Winnie Mae, yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. And he says, you know what, Logan, I think you're the man for this. I need a bit of help, you see. You know these long solo flights? You know, there's a particular problem you might encounter.
I'm not installing a toilet in your airplane, Wiley.
He says, no, don't be silly. You know how we do it. We just go in a bucket. No, not that. The pressure, the cold, you can start to lose consciousness. It's very easy to lose consciousness, to hallucinate, to can be really tough. I need to get her up real high, to really put myself through some extremes. But if I do it on my own, it's very dangerous. Will you be my co-pilot? Help?
Absolutely.
Yeah? Yeah? Okay. So yeah, we're going to take this girl up about as high as she can go. It's not going to be the safest flight you've ever been on, Logan.
If I told you anything about my recent history and the things I've been doing, don't worry about it.
Okay.
As he scratches his neck.
Okay, now we're going to have to really wrap up warm for this. It's going to be a minus 50 up there. Whew. Yep. So look, I've got a spare pair of these thick fur-lined gloves, and we got a bunch of layered padded jackets and things like that. But your feet, that'll be the problem. You don't get... How good's your circulation, Logan?
Well, I'm a pretty active guy at the moment.
Good, good.
I'd say my circulation's pretty good. My heart's beating pretty good.
Right. Well, look, we're not going to get frostbite up there. Don't worry. You won't lose any toes. And if you do, I promise I'll make it up to you.
Thanks. What is the going price for a toe these days, anyway?
Logan. Look, let's get kitted up, and we'll take her up right in about 20 minutes.
Sounds good.
Okay. So the two of you wrap up in layers of clothing. You even see hanging on a hook a precious suit. And Wiley points to that and says, yeah, that thing ain't ready yet. By next year, I reckon, I'll be able to do this without any problem. It looks like a diving helmet and a, you know, like a diving suit, basically. I reckon I can get up to 40,000 feet with this thing, maybe 50. Anyway, today we're just going up to 35, but still, pretty rough. So then you head up, and he takes the Lockheed, the Winnie Mae, and you're climbing and climbing and climbing, and it's getting colder and colder, and the air is getting thin, and you're starting to feel, well, I'd say quite lightheaded, actually. You know, it's hard going. And what we'll do is... Both you and Wiley will have to make hard constitution rolls. You absolutely nailed it. Oh, my God, that's perfect. Wiley rolled a 91. So you're going up, and Wiley's kind of chatting to you. And then he's saying, yeah, Logan, this is...
Wiley.
You see his head loll over, and suddenly him letting go of the stick... The plane just starts bucks in the air and starts pulling out of its climb, and the instruments are all rattling all over the place, and it's starting to go into a nosedive as it reaches its zenith. It just can't, you know, you have to really keep the nose up. And yeah, you're going to have to grab the steering column and try and pull it out of the dive. Yep. So now is your time to make that pilot roll. Oh my God!
Critical!
Oh boy! For that, you're definitely going to get an increase, because you just casually reach over. You're going down. The macs have built up. You can feel the pressure against your face. You can feel like your skin being pushed back on your cheeks and flapping around. And tell me what you do for that critical. You can narrate exactly what you want.
Well, this is child's play compared to my last couple of weeks. You know, I just reach forward and grab the stick, you know, and just, you know, easily, you know, level off the plane. Kind of with my left hand to reach over and shake my friend Wiley. I'm like, wake up, stupid.
And he's like, oh, God, jeez, Logan. Oh, Logan, oh, thank God you got you. Oh, what happened?
What do you think happened?
Oh, man, this isn't good. Logan, do you want to come with me? Oh, then it wouldn't be a solo, would it?
No.
God damn it.
But maybe you should stay and I'll take the plane.
Logan, I put all my money into this. You ain't gonna sneak in right at the last. Take the glory.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, no, I reckon I'll be okay. A couple more times up there. How'd you do it? I mean, I know you're a younger man than me, but still, I mean, God damn it, Logan.
Hey, man, I'm just good that way.
Okay, and then you land. Lovely. No, for that critical, you'll actually get an additional bonus dice on your sanity roll. So roll a sanity roll with purple, and we will... Yes. Wow. You didn't even need it. Okay, so that is good, because you really needed that. And you can now roll a d6. Oh, okay. That's all right. 4, better than average. So your sanity goes back up to 48. And for that critical, I will also allow you to improve your pilot skill by a d10. So, Professor, AP...
Ah, yes. Detective Samuel Green. He gets a phone call saying that that his friend, Professor Thackeray, it's after midnight, and he's wandering Chinatown and being very belligerent with a bottle of champagne in his hand.
Amazing.
And so he drives down to pick his friend up and finds him sitting against the wall, the outside wall of a notable opium den on Mott Street, and swigging from a bottle of champagne.
Thankfully, prohibition is over, so you're not going to get arrested for that. But yeah, Sam kind of pulls up in the car, opens the door. You can see that he's still got his pajamas on underneath his police jacket. He didn't even have time to change. And he walks over and he says, "Thackeray, can you explain to me why I was got out of bed at midnight to come down and look after some crazy drunk professor?"
"I received some news today, Sam." And I hand him a letter that explains that my grant has been approved for to continue the psychological effects of superstitions and ancient religions on behalf of Columbia University. And Professor Thackeray just like stares up at him and he says, "I went to her office, Sam. I went to tell Elizabeth of the news, and she's with him. She's with Dr. Tenpenny. They've flown to Stockholm for the Nobel Prize banquet. They flew together, Sam."
"Oh, come on, Prof. You don't have to always see the worst in people. They're colleagues, aren't they?"
"Why him?"
"Oh, come on, Thackeray. Just because they're doing a paper together doesn't mean they're banging." "Sorry, look, I'm sorry. I'm just a New York cop, eh?"
"Why can't I cry, Sam? Why can't I cry?"
"Oh, I don't know. I don't cry much myself. Look, come on, let's put that bottle down. Come and have a real drink. That fancy French monk, that won't do anything for you."
"They wouldn't let me in the den, but they took my hat."
"They what?"
"They stole my hat. I want to report a crime."
"They stole your hat? Can you tell me exactly, Prof, why they stole your hat?"
"My cowboy hat. I bought it in Oklahoma. I was wearing it and they took it. I know they did."
"Thackeray, come on. Put that bottle down. Come with me. You show me which one this was. Was it this one here you're sitting outside?"
I take a step back and I throw the champagne bottle against the wall and I say, "This one."
Whoa. Look, I got a bit of pull in this town, but you keep acting the fool and I won't be able to do anything for you. Now, just take it calm. What the hell are you doing going into this joint for? You're not smoking that shit, are you?"
"I need something, Sam. I can't cry."
"Yeah, you keep saying that. I don't quite understand why you're so keen on turning on the waterworks. What does that ever do for you? Makes you look like a baby."
"Ever since I came back, my eyes are dry, Sam."
Your eyes are dry. Sure, but we'll get them nice and wet. Let's go to this bar I know on Delancey. Come on."
"Fine." And he gets in the car. In the back of the car, the patrol car. He says, "Thank you for coming to get me, Sam. I need somebody right now."
"Well, you owe me one, that's for sure."
"Where are we? Are we driving through Little Italy?"
Yeah, you know, up to Delancey."
I sink lower in the chair.
"Hey, what's going on, Prof? You owe someone some money? You been gambling again?"
"I have not, but there's some mafia people who have become involved in my... Somehow they've become involved in my research work, and...
Oh, yeah.
They are, Actually, I don't quite remember. How did the mafia get involved?"
"You don't know. They just came and found all three of you."
"They visited me at the Waldorf."
"They did? That's a bit far uptown for these wise guys."
"I don't understand what they want from me."
"Well, it can't be anything good. I mean, why didn't you tell me something? I could have maybe looked into it."
"Well, I mean, I was leaving for Oklahoma. It just slipped my mind. We had to get on a train pretty quickly for my research."
"Did you get a name?"
"I believe I did."
Yeah, Casale, yeah. Oh, you're so drunk, Prof. You did tell me about this, but I couldn't find out much. But look, if they approach you again, you play it cool and try and find out what's going on. You said they came looking for you specifically and your pals, is that right?"
"That's right, Sam. They approached me at the bar, and they gave me a warning in so many words."
"Right. Well, what are the three you've been up to that the Mafia is interested in?"
"Well, we've been doing some research, and there's a company called Caduceus involved in it."
Caduceus. Oh, that's those fancy guys up on Park Row, yeah?"
"Yes."
"Yeah, they got a nice office up there, but what the hell?"
"They've been bankrolling my research."
"But what the hell's the Mafia interested in a bunch of eggheads?"
"But I don't know. I've been trying to get to the bottom of it, but Caduceus won't tell me."
"Yeah, well, You sound like you're getting in deep into some dangerous stuff, Prof. Just watch out for yourself, all right?
Well, what does it matter? Elizabeth is away in Stockholm.
Oh, come on, come on. Right, we're... And he just stops the car, drags you out, takes you into the bar.
I wish the mafia would end it right now.
And he's just pouring whiskey after whiskey down your throat. As we fade to black. As you fade to black.
Right, right.
Because I don't think you're good at holding your alcohol, I would imagine.
No, after one bottle of champagne.
All right, well, that's great. So, yes, you can make a sanity roll with a bonus dice. Wow. Okay, well, you get 2 sanity back.
Nice.
Okay, so, Richard.
Yes.
You have been reading all about snakes. And what you've discovered, I would say, is heartwarming. Contrary to popular belief, snakes are not cold. They are very caring for their young, and they make excellent mothers.
Oh, that's great. That means those little snake babies we saw will be well taken care of, at least.
Exactly. And snakes get a bad rap. That's what you mainly pick up from your research. But you do also discover some very interesting things about all the mechanics of how they inject poison. It's fascinating. They can consciously control how much venom they release on each bite. So they can either inject enough to kill an animal or just to paralyze it. So, amazing. I really hope that is true, because but it probably isn't. But anyway, in this world, it is. In this universe, that is true. So
that'll come in handy.
So what that will translate to for you is that you can do the same. You can bite to stun or bite to kill, depending on what you wish to do. Yeah, because obviously, just biting someone and then dying isn't necessarily what you always want. I mean, maybe, but anyway. So, do you want to go and see Molly?
A bite to stun.
Another bite to stun.
Right.
Okay. So, where are you meeting Molly then?
I'll meet her. I'll go to the museum.
All right. So, you head to the Museum of Natural History, yes?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. So that's on the Upper West Side. So, you head to the Upper West Side, just by the side of the park. And you head in to the dusty old hallways of the museum. And Molly is there, as usual, working hard. So she's obviously delighted to see you. She comes rushing over to give you a not entirely chaste hug. She presses herself against you in a pleasing way.
You're going to make my fangs come out.
Yeah. God.
I couldn't help it. I had to say it.
And she says, "Oh, Richard, I've been missing you. I shouldn't say that, really, should I? That'll get you all big-headed, won't it?"
"Oh, I don't mind hearing it. I've been missing you too, doll. A lot, I can tell you that."
"Oh, that's sweet of you. So, where was it this time? Africa? China? North Pole? Where they got you going?"
"Actually, they sent us, because I believe I talked to her about Caduceus last time."
Yeah, you did.
So she knows that we kind of, I'll say, this time actually was Oklahoma.
"Oh, well, that's no fun, is it?"
"No."
"No, especially these days. I mean, must have been pretty sad out there."
"Well, the town itself was doing okay. They had a bit of a problem with the snake problem there that we kind of helped."
"Snakes? In Oklahoma? Are you sure?"
"Very sure, doll, very sure."
"Okay. I mean, yeah, of course there's snakes all across this country, but Oklahoma is not exactly the first thing you think of."
"No, I suppose that's why we were sent there, to, investigate and see what was going on. But, it's all taken care of. Nothing to worry about now, doll. Nothing to worry about. How have you been?"
"Oh, I've been fine. You know, I've been thinking about what you were telling me, what you were asking about the Caduceus organization. I don't know, I was doing a bit of research in the New York Public Library about them."
"Oh, well, that sure is sweet." And he kind of winks at her and tucks her under the chin, you know. "What did you find out, doll?"
"Well, here's the thing. They've got quite good records up to about 25 or so, you know, with Needham's industrialist kind of pedigree and kind of all the projects that are undertaken, the big infrastructure and construction projects and, you know, all the great works they've been doing, but all from a very commercial perspective. But then, apart from a few references to their change of heart or whatever it was that Needham had to turn them into a benevolent, charitable organization, there's absolutely nothing about them from the last 6 years. Nothing. Couldn't find anything. Now, doesn't that strike you as odd?
does strike me as very odd.
You'd think there'd be newspaper articles. I swear, Richard, I couldn't find a single thing. And I am a good, damn good researcher, Richard.
Well, of course you are. The best, Molly. The best.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing, it's like they just don't exist? Is that like it, how it was?
You know what? If I was a conspiracy-minded person, I would say only two explanations. One, someone is going around removing all these newspaper articles, removing, like, taking out the copies wherever they're mentioned, but that's crazy. Much more likely, they're using their political influence to stop any of this stuff getting reported on.
That does make sense, considering kind of, well, do you think that I should stop working for them?
Well, look, all I'm saying is it's strange, isn't it? What are they trying to hide?
He kind of scratches at his, you know, as we do, scratch at your scales.
She says, look, and here's another thing. A strange thing happened a few days ago.
Oh?
Yeah, I was working late, and someone came out of the department, wanted to speak to me about a matter. And, you know, it must have been about 8 p.m. I was thinking, weird time to come visit in. It's just, you know, why would you? You wouldn't think someone's working that late. But he said, he came in, this guy. He didn't look like any academic. He sounded a bit rough, this guy. And I don't mean to cast no aspersions, but he sounded like one of these hoodlums. He had like, you know, he had a rough accent. And maybe he had slick back hair. I swear to God, I saw the flash of a gun inside his inside pocket. And he wanted to know what I was found out about Caduceus. And I said, who are you? How do you even know? And he said, don't worry, miss. We got our eyes on you and your pals. And then he left. I was shook to my core.
That is very scary. Molly, I don't know if you should be staying alone by yourself.
Yeah. Oh, Richard, I know that game. Don't you pull that one on me.
Oh, no, that's not any kind of... That's not what I meant. I just meant if you have girlfriends or someone you... Or your mother, somebody you could stay with. I wasn't talking about... I mean, my places. Mrs. Frump would never go for that. I mean, well, maybe she... Would you go for that? Never mind.
Richard, look, she pats you on the hand. She says, honey, you don't have to move so fast. And she gives you a shy smile. But you're right, I haven't been feeling too safe walking home at night, knowing that they're watching us, whoever these people are.
I've seen these men too. They've been outside my apartment. Mrs. Frump was telling me, or my room at the boarding house. Mrs. Frump was telling me about them. But I think they're bad news, Molly.
Well, look, you're right. I'm going to go and stay with my mom for a week or two. I'll probably take some leave at work, try and just keep low for a while. But you watch out for yourself. This guy didn't have any good intentions. I knew that for sure.
I don't suppose you would have dinner with me again, despite everything.
Oh, I'd love to. But when you come out to Queens, where mom lives, and we'll go to a diner out there. I don't want to be out in the city at night. Not for a while, at least.
Queens it is. Sounds lovely. And I'm glad that you can stay with your mom. I'm sorry to have brought this attention upon you.
Oh.
Miss Molly, I would never want anything bad to happen to you. You're very special to me, you know.
Oh, Richard, that's sweet. But I can look after myself. I was just a bit shook up, you know. It's just not what you expect to happen.
Well, I don't want anything to happen to you. You make sure you take care of yourself.
Oh, you know, I tell you what. To make it up to you, we won't go to a diner. I'll get Mum to cook her special. You can come and have dinner with both of us.
Oh, I get to meet your mom. She's like, it's that look of kind of panicked terror that guys get. And he says, well, that's awful. Yeah, I look forward to it, Molly. He just ends up saying.
Well, Richard, you got to do it at some point. Don't be so scared. She ain't going to bite.
He smiles, says, well, I'm not worried about that, Miss Molly. Just worried she won't think I'm good enough for such a smart and beautiful young lady as yourself.
Well, you'll just have to be on your best behavior. Just give her a nice big smile and show her your pearly whites.
He kind of flushes and says, yeah, I'll do that.
Okay. So you have a dinner invite to go and have dinner with Molly and her mom in Queens for next week.
Nice.
Excellent.
It's thank you time again. So first of all, thank you, as usual, to Sirenscape for providing the amazing sound beds, sound effects, and music for the podcast. Also, of course, this podcast It would exist, but it wouldn't have the same joy and energy it does have if it wasn't for the Patreon backers. I love you all. I thank you all. You make my day, my month, my year. And at whatever level you're backing, I'm just so, so grateful. And thank you for helping us keep going. If you want to show your support for the show, please go to patreon.com/grizzlypeaks, where you can join at a variety of levels, which will give you early access, exclusive bonus episodes, and even the chance to play in one of our invitation-only Patreon backer games. And they've been awesome.